everyone, and welcome to the Riffing on Realness podcast. I'm Carla Royal, a mindset and performance coach working with high-achieving entrepreneurs, and with me is Jennifer Flynn, an intuitive business strategist. If you are wrestling with how to be real in the midst of rampant superficiality, and it's causing you to overthink, be too guarded, and not live your potential, then you're in the right place. In this podcast, Jennifer and I explore how dropping the masks, being real and vulnerable, can help us connect, adapt, and find a richness of experience amid the chaos. We're glad you're here, and we invite you to tune in, slow down, and listen for your own wisdom. Hey, Jen. Good morning.
Welcome back.
Thank you. So Jen and I have been having some technical problems. It's so frustrating. It reminds me of I think we did an episode, Jen, about interruptions are really not interruptions. They're just life.
We did. And now we get to practice what we were preaching.
Exactly. We were on such a flow. So we'll see if we can find it again. But before we had all these technological problems, we were talking about what this culture calls negative emotions and how negative emotions such as grief, despair, anger have kind of been banned, like that somehow it's not very evolved or not very spiritual to have those feelings. And I think that that's doing us a really big disservice.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the things that I think is important to also recognize is, you know, what are emotions here to offer us? And, you know, we put them in this camp of negative or positive and, you know, stop killing my vibe, or don't be so negative, or don't be a downer, and everybody's just got to be positive all the time. And what that leads to is an inauthenticity of people then stuffing what they're really feeling, and also not having safe shared space for people to express where they are here and now. And I think there's a very big detriment to not feeling like you can be authentically who and what you are in this moment for fear that you're not being positive enough. Mm-hmm. Because the reality is sometimes there are things in life that are happening around us that don't feel good. And if we stuff those things and we don't fully express them, then there's real damage that can occur, because emotion is meant to move. And, you know, emotion being emotion, energy being the E, motion, you know, it's meant to move up, through, around, out. It's not always an appropriate time, as you had kind of mentioned before. Sometimes we do need to have the freedom to know ourselves and when we can park it. But it's important to also recognize the difference between parking emotion and stuffing emotion. Mm-hmm. Parking implies that we are recognizing that it needs some attention, but we're not prepared or feeling like we can deal with it right here and right now. Stuffing means we're trying to hide from it or escape it. And I think those are two things that many of us have employed in the past and will probably employ in the future, but there's a very big difference between the two.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I love that idea of emotion, that emotion is meant to move. And as you just stated, that it's also, you know, as children, if we're traumatized, or even as adults, if we're traumatized, we may need a minute before we can allow that to move, because it may feel like it's going to somehow consume us or kill us. I was telling a story before our technological issues that, you know, most of my listeners, Jen, know that over 20 years ago, I went through what I call my breakdown breakthrough, I was just so consumed with despair and hopelessness that I almost died, literally. And I just last week spent a day in deep, deep reflection and looking at some things. And I spent a lot of the day just grieving. And that grief sort of took me into a feeling of despair and hopelessness that I really haven't felt in a very long time. And it felt so important, Jen. I'm not saying it wasn't fun, but it felt really important to give expression to, in some cases, years of disappointments that I hadn't really allowed myself to feel. But it was I noticed in the middle of it, the insight that I got in the middle of this experience last week was that it was completely different from what I experienced over 20 years ago. Over 20 years ago, I had this idea
or this story or this narrative, whatever you want to call it, that despair and hopelessness were these horrible, horrible, dangerous things to do, to feel, to have, to experience, and that to go into it fully would kill you. And I had this story that it was bad and wrong and a weakness on my part and not very spiritual, not very evolved, whatever you want to call it. And because of that story, that narrative that I had, and because of so little support in this toxic culture to feel that deeply, that darkly about something, and to try to handle all that on my own, it almost did kill me. But what I noticed in this last week with the despair and the hopelessness was that I could see it was something separate from me, and I could feel sort of how it was. It was really powerless. It couldn't harm me. It was there. What it wanted is sort of like a kid saying, "Hey, Mom, look at me, look at me, look at me, look at me." They just want to be validated. They just want to be seen. They don't want to be banished. And so when I saw that, when I could see that despair and hopelessness sort of sitting over there and go, "Hey, look at me, Carla, look at me. Just look at me. Validate me. It's been rough. It's a rough ride as a human being, a divine spirit and a human limited body in a toxic culture. It's a rough ride." It is. Even in the midst of lots of good things, good, true, beautiful things, it's a rough ride. And I just want to be acknowledged, but I can't hurt you. And I really felt into that deeply, Jen. And I was like, oh my gosh, there's no problem here. There's no problem feeling existential dread or hopelessness or despair. It's really just a part of the human condition. Nothing to be concerned about, nothing to banish, and conversely, nothing to take up residence in. I took up residence in it 20 plus years ago, collapsed completely into it 20 plus years ago. In this case, I didn't have to do that. So it felt like this important thing that if we could just allow for it, allow each other to do it, to witness one another, to witness our pain, to validate it, then this week I just feel like a different person because I allowed myself to go deeply, deeply into the grief.
So informative. I mean, when you describe it that way, it's like, what it's there to do is just be informative. It's there to offer you perspective. And what you described of 20 years ago and now, what I hear the difference is, I'm sure there are many, but like in the blanket big picture, is your perspective and your ability to be the observer to some degree of and witness, to bear your own witness to the pain and the suffering and to allow it to be seen and heard and acknowledged and even maybe to teach you something. And I think we also often have to remember when we think about this culture of positivity or spiritual bypassing, that if we did not have the opposite set of feelings, the feelings that were less desirable, that were painful, how would you ever appreciate the greatest joys? Mm-hmm. If you hadn't had the depth of emotion, you know, equally to one side of happiness as you are to the unhappiness, how do you ever truly appreciate the happiness? And somebody had said something once, I'm sure that this is a phrase that's out there, but to kind of illustrate the contrasting point here, it was something along the lines of the depth of your love is the potential depth of your wound. And, you know, that to some people might say, don't love too hard because you could hurt that much. But I think the bigger picture there is really about you kind of have to have both sides of the spectrum to have any appreciation for any good feeling. Like you have to know, you have to have had pain to really feel love to its greatest depth. I would flip that around and say that the depth of your wound can also be the depth of your love, because you know how bad something can be. You can then experience a greater depth of love and joyful and positive emotions as well. I might have just rambled a bit there, but I think, you know, it's about perspective.
Mm-hmm. I don't think you rambled. I think you riffed.
Yes, ma'am.
And I like it when we riff. Yes. I mean, the yin and the yang. I mean, you hear that term wounded healer, you know, the people who have been wounded and recovered and done that healing work make for the best healers, because they know what that's like. But I wanted to come back to something you mentioned about parking things, and is different than suppressing things or banishing things, suppressing emotion or banishing emotion, but parking the emotion can be really useful. And I want our listeners to hear that. I was, you know, Jen, you and I both have been through a breakup this year and, or last year, whenever, and recently, I'll say, and a lot of grief, a lot of transition and things like that. And I remember talking to a mentor of mine saying, you know, I just collapsed on the sofa and I'm just streaming Netflix all day long if I'm not working. And I was feeling really judgmental towards myself. And I didn't say I was feeling judgmental. I just told her that. And she just said, oh, isn't that wonderful that you have that opportunity to just sit there and just zone out for a while until you aren't quite as tender and can process those emotions. Isn't that wonderful that you have Netflix to do that? And I felt like this little burden of judgment lift off of me, like, yes, yes, you get to do that. And I think the key is just don't stay there. You know, you don't stay there. Don't take up residence there, but you do get to park it until you're a little more solid.
I think awareness is the key and intention. Like, you know, when we park something, understanding that the car is still idling and that it will need our attention at some point, and giving yourself permission for now not to be the time. I mean, I had a situation a couple of weeks ago where somebody stepped on something that I didn't realize was still so tender. And it had been, you know, I've done years of therapy over it, let's be honest. And there were some circumstances that had come up on the periphery that had made me a little bit sensitive, and in expressing that to someone, and then they stepped on it hard because they thought they were helping me. And they really felt like they needed to like peel back and dig in. And I needed to like express this right here, right now. And I voiced, no, I cannot. That's not a healthy thing for me to do right now. And they kept on digging, and it actually was very traumatic and kind of damaging, mm-hmm. Of our relationship a little bit there, where I kind of had a temporary loss of trust because I didn't feel safe in that moment. And when I then went to unpack that with another mentor and professional later, he's like, you know, there's clearly some things here that you should continue to deal with. And we can do some hypnosis or we can do some things. And I was like, no, 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 no. Mm-hmm. Like, I cannot open this can or this Pandora's box any further than it's been breached right now. Like, I don't have the emotional bandwidth with the other transition in my life. And the response I got was very positive and affirming. And he's like, absolutely. And I would professionally agree with you that in this other transition that you're dealing with, this would be heaping things on top of things. And it doesn't let you deal with any of it in a healthy way. Now, I was thinking in that moment, it would be months before I would be willing to revisit this. And lo and behold, just giving myself the permission to say, to honor that this was traumatic for me. It was difficult. I'm having a lot of emotion around it. And it's too much emotion for me to deal with right now. And giving myself permission to put that in the parking lot. I was surprised that in two short weeks later, I was ready to address it. I did have the emotional bandwidth. And I think it was just that I'm going to say, for me, the big thing was the permission to park.
Yeah.
And to give it a temporary spot that it didn't have to bleed into everything of my life right here and now. And I think in doing that, it allowed me to speed up the time at which I was ready to address it. Mm-hmm. And I'm amazed that something has since stepped on that trigger after I gave myself the permission to park it. I dealt with it. And then I got triggered again. It was kind of like the universe was conspiring on my behalf, mm-hmm. to say, you need to deal with this. And we're going to give you training ground to practice how to manage these things, because it will continue to come up. Mm-hmm. And you advocating for yourself and giving yourself your own permission and peace of mind and perspective to deal accordingly.
I love that. It was an honoring of yourself, and your therapist was able to honor you as well. And I think that parking it can be an honoring, a good boundary to have when you need to. And it can also be an honoring to give yourself the space to give expression to all of that, like I did last week when I went into some deep grief. You know, I was just talking to a new client yesterday, and he was just saying, you know, I just need somebody to share, you know, how overwhelmed I feel and how stressed I am. This is a young entrepreneur. And I told him, I said, you know, I have so much respect for you that you see that need and that you're willing to be open and honest. And he said, yeah, man, we just can't handle it all. We just can't take it all on and not have any place to express it. I said, yeah. I said, but the message you've gotten as a man in particular is that you don't get to have these emotions. It's weak, you know, it's girly, it's whatever to have these emotions. Women sort of get the message that it's bitchy to be angry, you know, so men get to be angry. Men don't get to be sad. Women get to be sad, but we're kind of, you know, even then we're sort of weak because we do that. But this is just the condition of women. And to be angry or really powerful, you know, women get labeled bitchy. And so I have a lot of respect for people who can come to the table and give expression to their struggles, to their doubts. And the culture that we're in right now is just so hyper-individualistic. And not, you know, and we present our perfectly coiffed self to the world via social media or wherever else. I think it's killing us. And I think people are desperate for those safe places you just mentioned to come and have a minute with what they're dealing with.
I so agree. I think, you know, what would it look like to create safe space for people to express themselves wherever they are right now and be honored? You know, I think that's a two-part question. You know, what does it look like for us to create our own safe space to and honor ourselves in that expression? But what can we do communally as a society to create that safe space to be expressed? I know, you know, a lot of us growing up had certain things instilled in us that impact our expression today. I mean, certainly for me, the every time I would express emotion, even as a young child, it was very uncomfortable for people. And they don't know if, and I think it's really about people showing you their blueprint. When we express emotion and someone has a response to it, whatever that response is, they're showing you their blueprint. It's not about you and your emotion. It's about how they're responding or reacting to it. And I know I heard a lot as a child, you know, if I were crying about something, it was always minimized or trivialized or not enough of a reason to be expressing emotion. And I would often hear, you know, I'll give you a reason to cry, or I'll give you something to cry about. Like, just shut it up, shut it down, get rid of it. It's not valid or worthy. And I think I'm not the only person who's probably heard that from traditional parents, but, you know, we then take those things, and I think you can take it to the other side of the spectrum too, where every little thing gets a lot of attention. So where is the middle ground? How can we provide safe space, safer and sacred space even, for people to be expressed and to be honored and to not only be, you know, have judgment withheld from the outside world, but also to withhold our own judgment?
Mm-hmm. That's a good question. By the way, Jen, my mama used to say to me, don't be ugly, boo, if I were expressing something like anger or disappointment or whatever.
Be a good girl.
Be a good girl. Don't be ugly, boo. And, you know, of course, my male clients, you know, have heard, you know, man up, you got to be a man, you know, don't be a pansy or whatever. So
don't be a Sally.
Yes. So, yeah, I think the first place it starts with in regard to your question, Jen, is within myself, because if I'm uncomfortable with my big emotions, then in all likelihood, I'm going to be uncomfortable with your big emotions. If I'm spending a tremendous amount of energy trying to keep my little big, not my little, but my big intense emotions packed away so that they don't seep out, then when you have your big emotion, it's going to threaten my control. And I think that that's a big reason. I think, number one, that's why I'm a really good coach, because I have had a lot of big emotions that I have dealt with and processed over my life. And I think it makes me able to sit and tolerate other people's deep emotions. What I notice is that others have different kinds of responses to big emotions. One common response is the helper. And we addressed this in another episode, I believe, recently. What is real help? You know, because what happens when somebody's feeling large, big, intense emotions is the helper will come in and try to fix it for them. And this is not helpful generally. Generally, people need to just be heard and witnessed long before a solution is offered. There needs to be space for that. So I would say that the very first thing is that we have to learn to sit with and tolerate our own deep emotions, our existential dread, our despair, our hopelessness, and understand that it's not the monster that we think it is.
I so agree. And I think, you know, that kind of made me see a picture in my mind as you were talking about, like, you know, if we can't deal with our own big emotions, then we certainly can't deal with others. And I think of the time in my life when I had a hard time dealing with my big emotions. And, you know, I think there's certainly a number of things that factor into it. One was having the right people around me, that I felt that safety and that I could express. I am an external processor. And if I'm in an environment intimately with somebody who is not an external processor and doesn't want to receive my external processing, then I tend to go within, because I also have a little bit of a burden trigger. Not a little bit. I have a huge burden trigger. I'll just be real honest about that. I do not like to burden other people. Mm-hmm. And so I would get into this habit of keeping it all in. And what I did was I built this armor. I built this 20-ton shield that would keep everything neat and tidy inside, mm-hmm. and had a certain exterior to it. And the problem was, while it was preventing some seepage, it was kind of, I know this sounds graphic, but it was kind of rotting me from the inside out, mm-hmm. because there was no breathing. There was no air. I was getting wounds under the armor. And certainly there were little chinks that something might get in, and it might not have been that big of a deal, but because it came through a tiny little hole, you know, it had its own deep penetrating power. But the big thing I noticed most was not only was stuff not getting out, nothing good could get in either. Mm-hmm. Nothing good could get in either. Mm-hmm. And when I did take off this 20-ton shield, I felt like a turtle without the shell. And it was such, so much vulnerability. And it's like even the air hitting your skin was too much. It was so tender that it's, you know, it's an extremist situation. You've either got 20-ton armor or you take it off and you've got ultimate vulnerability. Mm-hmm. You know, how can we create this permeability, if you will, for people where good stuff can still get in, they can have space and time and their own permission to process what's going on inside and let it out in ways that are healthy and feel good. I think your point, it begins internally with ourselves. Mm-hmm. But I think to the same point, we have to also look around us and recognize when people are in pain and suspend our own judgment and not let it trigger our own story as much as we can. And I think what's called for is deep compassion.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that it takes, you know, building rapport, and that, you know, one of the things that I do, Jana, I know you do this too, is that I have year-long coaching programs with my clients, because it takes a minute to build deep connection and trust. I know that I've been working with a guy for a year and a half, and he, you know, about a year into our coaching, he came to me one day, very timid. He's not a timid guy. He's a macho, powerful, successful guy. And he came to me rather timid. I'm like, man, what's going on? he said, well, there's something I want to share with you, but I don't know if it's okay. And I'm afraid. But I haven't been able to talk to anybody else about it. And I just don't know. And I'm like,
he was peeling away his armor.
Yeah. I said, man, I'm here. You know, he says, I know you are. And that's why I think I can do it. And then he shared something extraordinarily personal and vulnerable with me. And then he cried and told me just how good it felt to be seen and not judged. But that didn't happen, Jen, overnight. You know, that took a year for us to sort of get there. And I think, you know, when you're talking about taking off that 20-ton armor and being like the turtle without a shell and being so vulnerable, I think about ripping off a fingernail and how vulnerable it is under that. You know, you need your fingernail. The turtle needs its shell. There is a balance there of, you know, we can share little bits and see how it's received. Because if a person can't, you know, I don't want to dump all of this on someone if I don't first have some sense that they can handle it. And I can do that by sharing bits and pieces at a time until I feel safe enough that I can trust that person. Not to say that they have to be perfect, not to say that they might make a mistake in how they handle it, but if there's a real trust and a resonance and a rapport, then I can say, hey, your response right now is not really helpful to me, and I would like a different response. Can you do that? If you can't do that, let's stop this, and I'll go on my way. So I think there are ways that we can have boundaries around this and respect around this as we build rapport and trust and connection.
I think you're so right. And I think, you know, so many times people are particularly timid about that trust and that vulnerability, because when you share something so deeply personal and internal, it's like handing someone the knives and expecting them not to, and showing them where all your soft spots are and expecting them not to use them.
Right.
You know, it's like giving them a weapon and expecting them not to use it. And that seems like a very simple thing. Like, we, of course, no one's going to cause you harm, but the person sharing that doesn't know that with 100% certainty.
Right. That's right. So I think it begins with us learning to tolerate our own emotions and uncomfortable emotions, that they're really not dangerous. They're information, they're energy wanting to move through us. And then secondly, becoming the kind of person that can sit across from someone and witness their emotions without going right into rescue mode or trying to stop them from that. It's scary, Jen, to watch people go to the depths. You know, one of the best things I think I did for myself 20 plus years ago is I refused to let anyone rescue me from that deep bottom that I had to hit in order to heal. There were lots of people who wanted to pull me right out of that. And in my unconscious at the time wisdom, I didn't allow it. I went all the way to the depths, and that's how I was able to hit my bottom and recover. And so I think that we have to learn how to tolerate other people's emotions and not be so quick to offer a fix, but just to witness them and just to sit and witness it.
100%. And it is so, I'm going to say it is almost, and I'm saying this as someone who has had some great depths of painful experiences and who's also witnessed some great depths of painful experiences. In my experience, it is almost as painful to sit with someone who's in deep, deep despair and only bear witness to it and not try to want to rescue or solve as it is to be the person sharing the thing. Like, especially if you're a helper, it triggers so many things within us of our own stuff. And it is hard. It's hard to not want to solve a problem, to make somebody want to feel better. And I think we touched on this in a different episode where you were talking about Anne Lamott and her son, that our need to make somebody feel better is really not about them as much as it is about making ourselves feel better.
That's true.
And wanting to escape the discomfort of the moment. And I will say that, you know, thinking back or reflecting back on the time when we lost my younger sister to a car accident, there were people who came and had nothing to say, but they came and they showed up and they sat and they bore witness. And it was excruciatingly painful for them. I mean, I can remember one couple in particular who was a friend, who were parents of one of my dearest childhood friends, that just couldn't say anything. And they were upfront about that, but they came. And I would say that was the standout, most meaningful thing. And there were people who didn't come, who were my closest friends, who just didn't show up because it was too painful and uncomfortable for them to bear witness to our pain. And so they didn't say anything. They didn't show up. And in this season of my life, I can have deep empathy for that. And I have no judgment. In that season of my life as a teen, I was 18 when that happened, almost 19. I was resentful that you couldn't show up at all. It's painful. It's hard to bear witness for this, but I will say the most comforting thing wasn't people trying to find the words or trying to make it better or to try to say the right thing. It was the people who just showed up and were honest about what they could or couldn't offer and who just said, I don't know what to offer, but I'm here.
Yeah. I love that. And that's been my experience too, Jen, is just the people who show up. They don't have to have an offering other than just to show up and be present and without
acknowledge it, to your point earlier.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that happened to me last week in that reflection I was in all day and the grief and stuff, one of the things that I did when I was grieving and feeling all the disappointment and the despair was I started to get pretty whiny. But I started to get kind of whiny and a little victim-y. And then I became judgmental about that. I'm like, you shouldn't. And then I was like, wait a minute. All they want is just to be seen and heard for a minute. And then when I just dropped the judgment and just let the whining happen for a little while, like you said in the beginning, that emotion moved through me. And I came to a very, very different place with all of that. So, you know, those people who showed up for you and me showing up for me last week without the judgment, but just the presence was incredibly powerful. I just noticed the time, Jen, and we do need to bring this to a wrap up. And it's a deep, big, good subject.
It certainly is. You know, I think if I were to offer any closing, it'd just be the reminder to all of us that it is not only okay, but perfectly appropriate to give yourself the permission to honor where you are and to trust that the people that you've surrounded yourself with, not only have they had those moments, but will have those moments again. And we just have to lift each other up. The rising tide lifts all ships and recognize, you know, we all get a turn. And as much as we can, just to bear witness and trust that that's enough. In fact, it is the very best medicine.
It really is. You know, these emotions of anger, despair, hopelessness, you know, all of that angst, it is part of the human condition. And when we can stop separating our emotions out into good and bad and just bring everything in together, we are going to feel more whole.
More whole. I think the world certainly needs more of that.
Absolutely. Thank you, Jen.
Always my pleasure. I look forward to next time.
You've been listening to the Riffing on Realness podcast with Carla Royal and Jennifer Flynn. If you've enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe and share with a friend. We would truly appreciate it if you'd rate and review this podcast, which will help others find us. You can visit me, Carla, at carlaroyal.com. I am a mindset and performance coach working with high-achieving, high-performance entrepreneurs and business owners who are quietly dealing with too much mental chatter and anxiety. You will find Jennifer at thebalancemaven.com. Through her uniquely balanced approach, she combines an omnipresent intuitive gift with experienced informed strategies to help spiritually minded business owners safely explore their soul's edges and strategically build a business that is a vehicle for a life they love to live. We'll see you next time on Riffing on Realness.